We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 17. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on IG at mintinc_USA. So one quick thing before we get into our episode, for anyone who is a long distance investor, I can't understate the importance of having boots on the ground. So even if you have a property manager and they're doing a good job, it doesn't hurt to have someone you know in the area do a drive-by and just check on things and make sure things are going all right. And so I met a woman on Bigger Pockets who I've been in touch with. She invests in the Dayton market. She lives there. So I had her do a drive-by a couple weeks back just to check on things, just to see what's going on around the house and everything like that. She lives near it, so it was pretty convenient for her. Probably something I'll have her do from time to time. Again, you know, I think my property management is doing a good job, but it doesn't hurt to have another set of eyes. And several things before we get into it. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment. It'll help us in the rankings and help us to reach more people. Also, you can purchase our merch at gum.co/BRED. We're also now on Twitter. You can follow us at Bread Podcast, BRED Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there. Keep in touch with us throughout the week, throughout the day. And also sign up for our email list. The link will be in the show notes. It's also in our link tree. You'll get discounts, additional content, resources, and also access to our newsletter. Hope you all enjoy the show. Let's get into it.
Join us for the Black Men Building Wealth Virtual Conference, February 29, 2020, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., featuring Charles Oglesby, Andre Hatchett, Jillian Gordon, Brian Robinson, Brandon Thomas, Oge Madu, Gene Holloman, Lamon Woods, Jay Morrison, Torrance Reed, Byron Sellers, Henry Washington, Brian Thomas, Xavier Miller, Chris Senegal, Jeremy Johnson, and more. Topics covered will include marriage, personal finance, debt paydown strategies, tech and investing, mobile home real estate investing, tax strategies, and more. All proceeds will be donated to the Bless a Black Man Foundation. It's the Black Man Building Wealth Virtual Conference. It's lit.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Here with me, I have Kalima, Pat, and Jasmine from the Legacy Group LLC, real estate investment company. They are based out of Washington, D.C. Thank you all for joining us today. Thank you all for being our first group interview.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
For sure, for sure. So I'd like to start off just asking more about everyone's childhood. So I would just love to hear from each of you what your childhood was like and what you saw or what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
And so I'll start first. So for me, I grew up with a big family and a big family on both sides, my mom's side, my dad's side. It's so many of us. My grandmother, she had purchased a home for the entire family to, you know, kind of grow up in Washington, D.C., Northwest, considered the Petworth area. But I didn't really see a lot of, there wasn't a lot being passed down. You know, everything that I'm doing, I kind of just learned. And I've seen a few, you know, just aunts, uncles do some things, but you know, quite naturally, you just kind of learn as you go. But one thing I know is that we had a home that we all were able to come to, and you know, for Christmas, holidays, you know, Thanksgiving. And when time came, my grandmother passed on, we sold the home. And I was devastated by that because the house was purchased for, you know, $40,000. You know, many, many moons ago, and at the time it was being sold, it was right before the turn in D.C. And I knew that it was happening, you know, things were changing, you know, neighborhoods were being cleaned up. And I begged my aunts and uncles to just keep the home, just keep it. The house is paid off, you know, just pay the taxes on it. I was in college, so I wasn't in a position to really, I didn't have a lot to leverage from that, but I wanted to keep the home. So, you know, $40,000 home valued at, you know, $500,000. And now I Googled the home not too long ago, and it's, you know, worth almost $1 million. So, you know, you just kind of think about those things. And, you know, growing up, no one said, keep grandmom's home, you know, stay where you are. So you just kind of take some of those lessons and, you know, try to apply it in your own life. So that's kind of a little bit of background here.
Thank you.
And for me, I've always, growing up, I've always lived in a house. My parents, they had fairly good jobs growing up. I didn't see my grandparents purchase homes, my grandmothers purchase homes until later in my childhood. But I did go through the process of purchasing a home as well as losing a family home as I got older. So not necessarily anything being passed down other than one of my grandmother's houses. But I did know that at one point in time, my family did own almost an entire block in Southeast, which is now Capitol Hill. And to see the process of them losing it, it's crazy to me because they're all million-dollar homes. And to own almost an entire block, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
Good. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll go next. Growing up, we always grew up in a house as well. My grandmother never owned a home. She actually rents an apartment from her brother's apartment building. So she's never owned a home. Most of my aunts, they owned homes with their husbands, but they never independently like owned anything. So my parents owned a home, like Jazz, they had fairly good jobs. My dad actually purchased a home with his mom at like maybe age 24, I believe. So that was like a goal. He always said, never go into an apartment. When you get out of college, we're going to get you in a house, and that's just what it's going to be. So that's what I did after I graduated college. I went back home. I saved for a few years, and then I bought a house, and the rest is history. I worked a year at Freddie Mac and saw a little bit about the mortgage industry and everything there, and here we are today.
For sure. Wow. Three definitely interesting stories and some themes. So for Kalima, what was that process like, just seeing that house sold? And out of the family at the time, like what was going through your mind then, and over the years, like how was your perspective maybe changed or remain the same about that event?
Yeah, so it definitely shaped the way I looked at my ability to do things. I knew that once I finished school, I wanted to own. I didn't know how and what that would you know, look like for me, but I knew that in the city that I grew up in, I had the ability somehow to get a piece of the pie. So what I ended up doing was graduating college. I went back home and stayed with my mother for about a year or two. I went back to school because that was right around the time the recession had hit in like 09, 08, 09. So I started working a very humble job at Target because I couldn't find a career job just yet. And then in 2012, right after I finished my master's, I hooked up with a family friend who was an agent, you know, home. I need to move out, you know, time. I want to buy a house to live in. So initially going into it, I was just thinking, okay, I'm just going to go find me a townhouse somewhere, maybe in Maryland. I looked at, you know, Upper Marlboro, all over the place. And then the agent said, you should think about multifamily. At that time, I didn't have any children or anything like that. So we started looking. I was like, you know, that's a good idea. He's like, you can rent, you know, live in one of the units and rent out one of the others. And, you know, maybe your mortgage can be taken care of that way. So if that it was at that moment, I knew ownership was my goal, but it, my direction kind of changed. So I went from looking for just a house to live in to purchasing a duplex in Congress Heights in Southeast D.C. So I purchased in 2012. My first tenant moved in 2013. She's still with me to this day.
Wow.
And she, you know, she essentially is taking care of the mortgage in the property.
Very cool. Very cool. And Jasmine, you mentioned that, you know, you've seen your family go from owning a block to that not being the case anymore. What was that like for you just watching that unfold? You know, back then, and also now, of course, seeing how the area has progressed.
In high school, it was kind of mind-boggling. Because even then, I think I still understood what real estate was and the potential of home ownership was. So when they sold the last house, which was my great grandmother's, her actual house, It kind of was devastating. And to now see, and me and my parents have these conversations now, that is, because in high school, I went to private school, and we had moved out Maryland, and we had these conversations of, man, we were paying for tuition. We could have kept, you know, a house. We could have potentially been the person to take over those houses as they were being sold. So, but I mean, you live and you learn. Trying to correct some of the things that we saw growing up. It's just mind-boggling, honestly, because just to know that you had a gym in Capitol Hill, which is it's rare to find anything under $1 million in Capitol Hill right now.
Wow.
And we had, at one point, I believe it was 7 homes my grandfather owned.
Wow.
And we don't have anything now.
Wow. So were you kind of sold off as he transitioned?
Yeah, he died before I was even born. He died when my father was a teenager. So as people got older, they started selling the homes off. It's just control issue when you have multiple siblings, you have multiple people involved. And you know, money, it tends to break families up. So it's just one of the things that we're trying to correct now.
Definitely.
Do a little different.
Absolutely. So that brings us all to today. So now you all are working together. So tell us about how this all came together.
Who wants to tell the story?
It's your story.
Go ahead, Kat.
So I've always been interested in real estate. I worked at Freddie Mac for a year. Coming out of school, I was all into the motto, we make home possible, and everything like that. So I was looking for some friends to do some investing with. I talked to Kalima. I met in 2009 when we started our MBA program. Jasmine, I've known since 2000 and maybe five or so.
Five.
That's right.
Yeah, around that time.
She went to high school with my brother, so it was like I had people in my pocket that I knew was interested, but I didn't really, you know, bring the group together until last year. And in the meantime, I had my dad had transitioned, and we tried to save that house back and forth in the court, and that didn't work out because I was trying to save that and rent that out. I had put multiple offers down, and nothing came through. And so in 2018, was it? We saw, I brought the girls together, and we put some money together for a condo in Berry Farms in Southeast DC. And so a lot of, they're about to build up the whole area over there, but then that got hung up. It was a vacant unit, let's say that. The whole building was vacant. The building had structural engineer damage and a whole bunch of other stuff, but that guy was just, we couldn't find someone to insure it, and we ended up getting out of that deal. And then in the meantime, we decided to actually make a business out of it and get an EIN number and started the whole paperwork and do the right thing. We started looking at other properties in Baltimore area and DC, and then the rest is history. We got that first. We ended up getting winning an auction in June for a property in Baltimore, and then we ended up winning the contract. We beat out 20 other contracts, I believe it was.
Wow.
For the DC property that we actually had. They wanted us to settle in the same weekend because we had already put a hefty deposit on the Minnesota Avenue property. We chose to go that route, and we ended up losing our EMD on the Baltimore property and kind of letting that one go and focusing on the Minnesota Avenue property, which is what you see today on social media and everything.
That is awesome. And so as you all know, it's very hard for Black people to work together sometimes, and for varying reasons, right? We can go down rabbit hole. But what inspired you all to push past kind of how we are socialized and say, you know what, this is something we can do and we can do it together?
Yeah. I think it's, we all have a common goal.
Mm-hmm.
We all are mothers of children under six. And just to be able to leave our kids something and to honestly show our kids the ropes. All of our kids tag along with us to our property. All of them, you know, understand, and we're teaching them that this is the way to build generational wealth. Mm-hmm. So to be able to build a business and build a brand for our children is a common goal. It's a common understanding. Every group disagrees. They have the disagreements. Every group has their moments. But I think our overall goal is all the same, and that's what we're striving towards.
Yeah. And I will say, I think that for us, we all, like Patricia mentioned, we've known each other and worked in different capacities. So when I met Patricia back in 2009, she was a hard worker. She was a go-getter. She was, you know, she get things done, right? So when we would pair up for group work in our class, we would always be together. We knew Kaleem's going to get this done. Patricia's going to get this done. We're going to get this A on this assignment, right? So it was a no-brainer when we, you know, it kind of came out that we had an interest in real estate. And then over the years, we built a great friendship. I trust her judgment. So when she mentioned, hey, I need you to meet Jasmine, okay, it was a no-brainer, right? So I think no matter what challenges we may face in a business as we go along, there's a common goal of respect. And, you know, we're going to be 100% honest, but we're going to keep working. And like Jasmine said, just continuing to show our children how to maneuver and change the narrative of, you know, African-Americans, African-American women, you know, in business, different things like that. So
I got one go back. I think what also helps us come together is that we all have different backgrounds. So Kalima's like in the contract, Jasmine is into like marketing, and then I my background is into the numbers. So for us, it's good to have a team that's diverse because we all bring different perspectives to the table. So if I'm looking at something, I might look at all numbers, but then they're like, oh, you need to look at this, or you need to look at that. What's this like? So it's like we all bring something different to the table, and a diverse group just helps bring us closer together because we all respect each other. We know, like, I don't, like for me, I don't trust too many people with my money. So if I can trust, I trust my girls, that's about it. I got friends that I've known for 20 years that I put this amount of money in their hands.
Right.
So for us, it was for building a team that I can trust. And I know if I'm doing something else, they got my back and I got this, likewise.
For sure. What are your 9-to-5 backgrounds?
I'm a financial manager for Human Spaceflight Budget.
And I work for the Department of Transportation. I do procurement systems.
And I'm the Jamaican of the group. I do IT, firewall engineering for State Department, as well as I do youth outreach for DC government.
Definitely. I can see how the different skill sets you picked up complement one another. So that's super cool. So walk us through kind of just purchasing that first property. Like, what was the process like? How much did you have to end up paying for it? What was that like? Was it, yeah, just tell us more about what that process was like.
So for us, after we had gone through some of the other, bids and properties and losing, and just to go back really quick, prior to the one that we did win on Minnesota Avenue, my great aunt had a home a block up from where my grandmother's home was. And my uncle called me and said, hey, I know you're into your real estate. Uncle Harold, who the home was left to, he's getting ready to sell it. You guys may want to look into purchasing or buying the property. Call, Uncle Harold's wife, because Uncle Harold was a sick at the time. Okay, long story short, we put our offer in and we ended up losing the bid by $900. So that was another opportunity to take a family home and keep it and maybe, add some value, there. But $900 loss. So that was actually kind of hard for us. So what we decided to do at that time was we really felt like we needed to get an agent on the team. So we, got an agent and started working with a friend of mine from high school. Patricia, I believe, found the one that we have now and sent it to us. And we were like, oh, we need to go. We need to, hurry up and see this. It was probably like July 4th weekend. At the time, we had already won the Baltimore property, but we were waiting on some mishap there. There were some squatters in there. We were locked out, just different things like that. So we looked at the property, went in there. The GC met us over there, kind of gave us an estimate. It was a quick turnaround, 3 days maybe?
Yeah, 3 days.
Yeah, 3 days. Put in our offer. And then I think they called the agent and said, listen, we have someone else that's between yours and another offer. So we need your final and your best. Okay. And so they were also willing to accept our offer, even though we came in a little lower than the other, our competitor, simply because we were able to offer cash. So that just kind of goes to show cash is king sometimes, especially in really competitive markets like the D.C. area. So we won that and started moving.
Very cool. Very cool. And you said that was that in D.C. or in Baltimore?
That's in D.C.
In D.C. Cool. Cool. How much did that end up costing you all to get the house?
It was so... The initial offer was for full. It was a full price offer initially for $250. We got on the phone. We said, what are we willing to come up with each, and we each said basically additional $5,000. So our final offer was $265.
Got it.
And we were able to, the GC, he was actually able to quote us numbers, you know, pretty fair, low numbers to renovate the property. So, so that we could really see some gains if once we resell.
Absolutely. So, you got the house and, you know, needs some work. Was that something that concerned you initially? Like, you got the house now, you know, now we kind of got work to do. What was that like for you? It was like, nah, let's do it. We're going to do this.
Going in, we knew it was a full gut.
Got it. Okay.
The house was in awful condition. Yeah. It had been sitting for at least 10 years. The floors were, everything, it was nasty in there.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
Broken.
Yeah, it was just a mess.
Yeah.
the porch is leaning, you know. And that's one thing I want to, like, in this business, especially as, you know, if you want to flip, you really have to have the vision. If you just go by what you see, you'll never acquire. So you really have to be able to have the vision going in and saying, you know what, I mean, the home had great bones. For it to have been sitting for that long, and it still have great structure, great, you know, the roof, you know, different things like that. It's like, oh, this is a no-brainer. We're able to now come in at a time where, I mean, the city is just doing a complete renovation, basically, and we're able to, you know, leave a little bit behind there as well. And just to note, the thing with the property, as we kind of talked about previously with, you know, just being able to leave things to your children, that we found out by meeting the neighbors, the owner was a gentleman. He was an older gentleman. He ended up passing away, and he left the property to his son. But his son, you know, and that's why it's important for us. We want to also teach the business side of this so that we're not just leaving properties to our children, but we're leaving them with the know-how to handle these properties. So the son couldn't keep it, basically. He didn't have his, you know, ducks in a row in order to really be able to keep the property. So, you know, that's something we definitely don't want our children to have to do. We want them to know what to do when that time comes.
And just to piggyback off, I think the thing that I'm the one who probably has more of the vision when we walk into the houses. Yeah. I've done a full renovation on my house that I bought in D.C. 3 years ago from head to toe, a 203K. And so I walked into the house and I'm like, y'all, we can knock this wall down. We can do this and do that. And I think I have more of the vision when we see it beforehand.
Yeah.
I'm learning slowly.
To get them to say, okay, maybe this is the one, maybe we can go ahead and proceed with this house.
Absolutely. So what's the plan with it? Are you planning to renovate it and buy and hold? Are you planning to flip it? What are your thoughts there?
So we're planning to renovate and put it back on the market for resale, and then take those proceeds and go bigger and continue to go bigger the next and go bigger.
Yeah.
So yeah,
eventually we'll have doors behind us where we'll do rentals. I want to get into mixed use. That's a goal of ours, so start small, end up big.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what's the renovation process been like? You mentioned it's a total gut. So what's that experience been like for everybody?
A challenge.
It's been a learning experience.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely have to be willing and open to taking some, I'll say lessons. Mm-hmm. We're learning a lot in this first process with just structuring
schedules.
Structuring different clauses into the contract to protect us,
mm-hmm.
you know, should the the contractors, the subcontractors, you know, they'd not be able
architects,
to kind of meet
anybody.
Yeah. We had to get another architect in the middle of the process, which, you know, ended up costing us a few extra dollars. It's definitely a learning experience, I will say that. But I think it's a good experience nonetheless. Going into the next property, we will definitely, you know, have a lot more tucked under our belts. But you got to go through it in order to be able to know, right? So no matter how clean and crisp it looks going in, it's always going to be something that's going to hang it up a little bit.
Yeah. It's just as simple as we went in and we thought it was just going to be a full gut. We didn't know at that time that we were going to have to bust out the whole basement floor. So that wasn't like accounted for in the budget, and it wasn't accounted for in the schedule. It wasn't accounted for anywhere. So that was an effort to everything. So it's just like being, I guess, putting buffers in everything and making sure we got a little bit of wiggle room in how we're moving so we make sure we have coverage.
Yeah.
Definitely. And what I like about that is you're learning as you go. You know, you're learning by doing.
And, yeah.
You know, a lot of people get hung up on wanting to dot every I, cross every T.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the most important thing is you knew enough, you had enough to get to the finish line of purchasing it. You had a general sense of what might come, but you didn't let the fact that you may not necessarily know every single thing that might be involved in the process to prepare it to flip. But if you were thinking about that, you probably would have never even bought the house in the first place. So I like the fact that
exactly
the attitude y'all have, just learn as you go, making adjustments along the way and keep it moving. So I think that's a very, very great quality.
Yeah. And I think one thing that helped us kind of like in this process is just networking too. We decided to share what we were doing. And, you know, a lot of times in this, you know, climate, we're move in silence type of climate. But really in real estate, you need to let people know what you're doing so that you can network with people and meet other people and kind of expand. Because throughout this process and sharing, we've met some greatly valuable people who have shared so much information just because they like what we're doing and, you know, they think it's a positive thing, that has helped us along the way and that will absolutely help us in the future.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what, as far as networking, what has helped you? Like going to certain meetups, like meeting up with certain people in the DMV area, what has been the most beneficial, just kind of helping you all get yourselves out there and learn from different people?
I think one of the biggest tools that has helped us is, one, our social media. A lot of people reach out to us. They love what we're doing. They want to do what we're doing, or they want to, you know, connect with us to see the issues that we may face, that they are thinking about, you know, jumping into the real estate game, and just the know-all of guiding through this process. And then just as many people that I would say that wish on your downfall, there's just as many people who are wishing you well wishes as well. And those people are the ones that are reaching out, hey, you guys need help with this. You might need a contractor here, or you might need an architect here. These are, or a real estate agent here. I have great people that I can recommend. And I think that's, we've also done meetups where we've gotten to share our story and been able to meet with people within this industry, and it definitely is a great tool to be able to network.
I think just to add on, outside of the meetups and social media, I also like had a mentor in the background that I met at a previous job who has sat down and talked to us. Years and years, and has a lot of doors under his belt. He had lunch with us to just kind of share his story and kind of steer us the LLC and what we need to do and how we need to do the articles and how we need to keep our fiancés out of the story, and you know, just kind of keep things aligned on track as a business from the business side. So he's our friend, our good friend, has been in the background. So it's always good to have a mentor just for yourself as well as
yeah. And then on the other tip to that, you know, we've had people actually message us and say, listen, I just want to be like a silent partner, you know. And so when you think about capital, as you know, for this, we did do hard money to kind of get, you know, get in. Mm-hmm. But obviously that's not sustainable long term. So as we kind of network and people are like, listen, I'm willing to invest, you know, and it's almost like a no brainer. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. A couple things. That was great. A couple things I want to touch on there is one, I second your statement regarding social media. Like, there is just so many amazing things happening via social media simply by putting yourself out there. I think even, you know, with our podcast, just the dialogues you're able to have with people who are trying to do the same thing are just amazing. Just sharing ideas, sharing tips, sharing advice, sharing resources. And I think it's all because you're doing, it's all because you're taking action, you're sharing it with the world. And I feel like when you put it out there, you know, those kind of things come back to you, you know, opportunities, lenders, you know, all these things. And the other good part is that you're not seeing it in with skepticism. You know, obviously there's certain things you have to verify, but I like the fact that you are all open to people, you know, in your DMs or people at meetups and just connecting and just continuing to build that network. So I think that's very, very cool. And then as far as the hard money, was that part of like the purchase price, or is it kind of with the like renovations? Just for our listeners who may not know how hard money works, can you walk us through a bit of how y'all are leveraging that?
So with the hard money, they give us basically the money up front for the purchase price. They gave us 70% of the purchase price, and 100% of the renovation cost. So every hard money lender is different. We just happened to find a good one that did cover 100% of the renovation cost. So that's how it worked for us.
Yeah. And then the other thing, they kind of do what they call a front load draw. Mm-hmm. Where at closing, because a lot of times with hard money lenders, you still have to come up with your initial startup cost to get the contractors in there to just get started. But they gave us what they call a front load draw, which is the initial first draw for getting the work started.
Got it.
Another thing they did is they bundled in the payments for the first year. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to make a payment until October of 2020. So we're doing the renovations and everything, and we're not going to market up yet. So the goal is to have it sold before a payment is even due.
Wow. That is incredible. Yeah. How much longer do you think you have for the renovations?
We're hoping to have it on the market in spring.
Wow, that would be incredible. And so ideally, you'll have it on the market, it'll be sold, they'll get their money, you'll get yours, and move on to the next deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very cool. And how did you come up with the idea that you wanted to flip it and kind of just use that to eventually get some doors behind you?
I think it was a mutual agreement. We all knew we probably weren't going to be able to sustain a hold for a house that cost that much. So it only made sense to just, you know, build on the capital that we need to be able to do a hold. So I think we all had a mutual understanding of, yeah, this is going to be a flip.
Yeah, just knowing the market, just knowing kind of the area. Yeah.
Running the numbers.
Yeah.
In DC is very, very much a seller's market still. So
definitely, I think we all had a mutual understanding that this was going to be a flip.
For sure. And what are similar homes in that area going for?
It varies.
Okay.
You can get a house for a row house like ours for the low 200s to all the way up to 550.
Wow.
Yeah. It depends on the upgrades in the house. It depends on, you know, it a lot of variables go into it. The ease of being able to get on the metro, or, you know, being within a distance of downtown or Capitol Hill. That's one thing about our house. We're in a great location of Capitol Hill. I think just accessibility downtown is one of the main things for price.
For sure. And what would each of you say is the biggest, has been your individually, your biggest lesson throughout this whole process?
We learned about 20 of them.
Yeah.
Contract.
The importance of contract. Being able to hold people liable within a contract.
Yep. Yeah. That's short and sweet. We learned that lesson a few times, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, just making sure that we are holding the people who are working for us accountable for our time and our money.
God said, you ain't learned it the first time. I'm going to send it right back and you're going to learn it again.
Yeah, you definitely have to just, and that, you know, one thing we learned, like I said, through networking, just different clauses that we can put into our contract to really protect our time. Because in the essence of things, the faster you can flip, the faster you can, you know, get your money back. So each day that you're not able to get closer to that end goal, you're losing essentially. So we've learned quite a bit in regards to that. And we've had a GC kind of share some information with us just to protect us. You know, they have been in the business 15, 20 years, so they've seen it all.
We learned the lesson twice.
Right. And so the thing is, it's like, with us, you know, being women, I mean, let's just call it what it is. Sometimes people think that we are naive, or we don't know, or we, you know, but that's not the case. So, you know, when you're kind of able to redirect and get things back on track, it shows people like, hey, okay, they mean business, you know. So that's probably, I would say, probably the biggest lesson. Holding people accountable.
For sure. And do you feel that since you are women, there may be people in the picture who's working on things who may think they could just kind of, they don't have to like hold to their word, and they could just kind of take advantage? Have you discovered that?
Most definitely.
Yes.
Most definitely. Young too.
Mm-hmm. A resounding yes.
Yes.
Most definitely. But one thing I don't, which is mind-boggling to me, where all three of us are one opinionated, and we don't hold our tongue. So I don't understand why anybody think that they can get over, and we won't. We might not catch it as soon
right away.
As mm-hmm. it has it, but we're definitely going to catch it. And then we also have some guys behind us that just, one, know the business. That once we get them involved, it's nothing you can really tell us.
Yeah.
For sure. And what are some resources that you would say have helped you along the way and helped you all to just increase your knowledge and just keep this shit going forward?
Networking.
Yeah.
Yeah. There, each of us have people that at any moment we can speed dial them and they will show up for us.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those people are, you know, family, but then some of those people are people that we've met, you know, throughout this process who, you know, want to see us win and make sure that we're, you know, on track. But, you know, like they said, without kind of networking and, you know, putting it out there, we probably, you know, would still be a little bit, I guess you could say, figuring it out. But, but yeah, I would definitely say that networking part has been essential for us.
Sure. So what does the future look like after this flip? What's next? Like, what do you all envision for the next several years or so and building this?
We definitely, you know, like, you know, Jasmine mentioned, expand, adding some doors, digging into maybe some community work as it relates to real estate, because I think a lot of what we don't see is people kind of sharing knowledge. I mean, you see a lot of it, but we want to just kind of keep that in our community where we grew up and kind of reach back. So for us, it's not just, you know, flipping and buying to make money and have cash flow and different. It's really more to it for us. We want to, it's the legacy group for a reason. So
yeah,
we really want to be able to do some reaching back into the community, kind of sharing knowledge, you know, creating spaces for, you know, people. We don't know exactly what group yet, but creating spaces for people, you know, who may need homes to live in, you know. So it's going to be full scale, you know, over the next few years. Y'all keep an eye out.
Don't be lit.
And I really like the fact that it's, you know, throughout this whole interview, a lot of it was mostly about legacy. It was about, you know, your children, or it's about, as you mentioned, the community. And I really like the fact that it's community based and it's not only for the benefit of you, but for other people. And, you know, I think that will just help you get, in my opinion, will help you get so much further. And I believe it will help people, inspire them to gravitate towards you and help you push towards that goal. So that's very, very cool. And also, we'd love to learn more about how, I think early it was mentioned the kids tag along, but I would love to hear more from each of you for how involved they are, how much they know about what's going on, like what their thoughts are.
They're really involved. They go over to the property, they put the mask on, the hard hat. They're there, present and accounted for. They watch HGTV with us. We go on field trips. We talk to them about the importance of, hey, this is our home. The three of us, we bought this house. Here's the, this is what we want for you.
Yeah.
And my son, how broken the houses are.
Yeah. My son, he's 4. And, you know, he's gone with us to many properties, you know, that we've looked at before we actually, you know, got this one. But he just refers to the homes as the broken homes. So when I tell him we're getting ready to go to Minnesota Avenue, he's like, oh, is that the broken one? Yes, it's the broken one. We're going to fix it up, though. So they know. They're very smart kids. They know exactly what's happening,
yep.
You know, and they actually make it easy for us to do business because they tend to be well-behaved, actually. So it's actually good.
Luckily.
Right.
Yes, very cool. I really like the fact that the kids are on it. I'm just thinking, you know, if I was around something like that as a kid, just the ideas that it gives you. So can you imagine, you know, they see it in like the broken stage, as he said, but like imagine mind blown they'll be when the renovation is done, and just seeing that over and over and over again, that visual in their mind, you know, it'll probably show them that anything is possible and you can beautify anything. And you can, I mean, it's just, I'm excited to just see how it continues to impact them in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's already impacting. Like, she, for career day, she wanted to be a house hunter, so she wore a hard hat, took a slab of wood, this t-shirt on there. Like, you know, I can, like, as far as real, like, had a house on it and it had something about real estate on it, and she was in her element. She felt like, hey, I went to HGTV, I can move this out. So I think it's already starting to trickle down. She goes to bed on HGTV every night. She'll watch that over cartoons. So I think it's working out.
I think it is too.
I believe in building foundations in kids and showing them the way. Any child that grows up saying something repetitively, it will be instilled in them. That was the case for me. And so I believe that showing a child that being able to build a business, being able to build a brand, being able to understand real estate, the value of real estate, if you show them at a young age, it will be instilled in them. It will be something that as they get older, it will remain with them, and they'll understand the importance of it. And I think that's one thing that we lack in our community. So I think that's one thing that I think we all are trying to instill in them. And it's good to have them around to understand it at such a young age.
Yeah. And then one thing I was going to say, for me, really, my father, he didn't go to college. My mother did, but it was more so for me. You have to go to college and you have to get a job, right? It was just more so that, you know, just get you a good job and you'll be fine in life. But as we see that you can't just have one source of income here. And so I can't honestly say that for my son that I'm going to just force college on him. I want him to be around other things to kind of see what it is that he may want to do, you know. So I don't think that I'm necessarily going to be that parent, because college is great, but then you have the student loan debt that you have to tackle, which is another reason why I did get into real estate, was because of, you know, at the time, Sallie Mae. So I don't necessarily want those types of burdens on him. And the girls are laughing because I complain about student loans quite often, maybe once or twice a week. But the goal is to have some, you know, some assets to continue to take care of those liabilities.
Yep.
So yeah, I want him to know it's not just about going to school and getting a job. It's about really creating something that you can thrive off of, because people get laid off in jobs every day. You know, what are you going to have to fall back on?
Yeah.
You know, different skills. You know, we looked for, you know, people or women or, you know, African Americans who are, you know, can do cut drywall. You don't really see a lot of that, you know.
Developers.
Appraisers. We don't see it. We don't see us in these fields, you know. So, we want to just make sure that they know there's more to it than just going to school and coming out with student loan debt.
100%. Yeah, it's crazy. It's the student loan thing is crazy, but I like what you're thinking, using assets over time to pay that debt down and get rid of it. Not allowing the debt to prevent you from getting into real estate. So I really do like that.
Yeah.
And what is one thing each of you would say to someone who is brand new in real estate? They're not really sure where to start. Quite frankly, they might be scared to even try to do something within real estate. What is one piece of advice you would give to somebody like that?
I would say it's a risk in anything.
You're right in.
We're
right
in
what I was
going to
say.
There's a
risk in everything.
Yeah. And I would say just start.
Scared money don't make no money.
Exactly.
you gotta start somewhere. And progress is a slow process, so it may take a while to get where you're going, but you have to start.
Yeah. I met a young lady via social media. We, the three of us, we had actually sat down and talked with her. She's in Detroit. which is a market that we eventually want to tap into. And she reached out to me about 3 or 4 days ago. And it was, you know, she wanted to know what my thoughts were on a class that she was going to pay, I think, like $1,500 for, to kind of learn the ins and outs of real estate. And so I gave her my advice, right? But then, you know, she mentioned, like, well, you know, there's some things I need to still do, like get my credit together. So I said, well, we need to halt on this for a moment. Instead of spending the $1,500 on this class, mm-hmm. you know, get the credit right. Because yep. when you get your credit right, you'll have access, even if you don't necessarily have capital to start, you know. So, you know, so just different things like that. I tell people to just kind of really know what your goals are. And then you can kind of filter and funnel through that way. But you got to start somewhere. If for me, I had to get my credit together as well, because on the duplex that I did buy, my agent stole $20,000 from me. And so I took a major hit there. My credit was shot. You know, that's it. I had to, you know, I was working hard for like 2 years to kind of get things back on track. But I knew that I wouldn't be ready now with the girls had I not done that, you know, made those sacrifices to get my credit right. So yeah, just start. Know what you want to do and start. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And for those people who do have money sitting around, I say this all the time: the money that you'll make in a year off of a flip is more than any money that you'll make with it just sitting in your savings account. Mm-hmm. So don't be scared.
For sure. And are there any books you recommend? Could be business related or otherwise. That could potentially help a new investor or someone who's interested in business or in real estate?
There's so many. There was one that I just was recommended. I had only gotten through a couple of chapters, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. I'm going to have to come back to that one.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I was going to say, most of my to come across, I don't hone in on real estate ones, more like leadership ones and project management, things like that. So, or a financial one. So I was just reading, I was rereading Rich Dad Poor Dad, little stuff like that. Yeah. Or it's a lady, you're a badass something. I can't call it on that one, but that's a really good one to basically tell you to come out of yourself. A motivational one. I read Dave Ramsey. Just mostly financial stuff because I'm a number guru over here. So I got to know how to move my money around and tell people how to move the money around. Exactly.
Yeah.
For sure. Awesome. And so where can people reach you if they like to talk to you all more, learn more about what you're doing, potentially collaborate? Or maybe they even in your area and want to link up with you all.
At the Legacy Group DC.
For sure. My last question: why the Legacy Group? How did you end up coming up with that name? I meant to ask that earlier.
Well, we were kind of, you know, just thinking about the group and what the goals were. And legacy just kept coming up, legacy. So once we kind of really align ourselves with what we want this business to look like, that's how we came up with the Legacy Group. And then, like I mentioned, you know, under that, we're going to have quite a few arms of legacy and community. So.
Yeah, we didn't choose like legacy real estate or anything like that because it's bigger than houses.
Yeah,
it's a long term outreach.
For sure.
And I think, you know, we're building a legacy, not just for ourselves but for our children, for generations to come. So it fits, you know, the what we're doing overall and who we're doing it for. Just to not do it for now, but do it for the future, for generations to come.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, Wow, this has been an incredible interview. I've really enjoyed just hearing how you all have come together, how you've grown together, how you just everything you have planned for the future, and how in the face of just different obstacles, you haven't let it stop you. You haven't thrown in the towel, and you have the end in sight. So I know our listeners will be very encouraged and very inspired by hearing this, especially those who are early on in their journeys. I think it's just inspiring to hear. You all started not too long ago, but you're definitely heading in the right direction. And we'll definitely have to do an update. See how.
Yeah, sounds good.
See what's shaking in the future. So thank you all so much. It's our first group interview. I think it went pretty well. So I appreciate.
Yes.
It
yeah.
So
thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Certainly.
Absolutely. And thank you all for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. Look forward to hearing from you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.